This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This early morning, every Nigerian receives a text message here in Lagos by the Independent National Electoral Commission, encouraging prospective voters to go to the polls on Saturday.
That's VOA's Peter Cloti on last-minute activities ahead of Nigeria's presidential election. Also, Cameroon's opposition leader is facing rebellion charges in court, and a rare black leopard in Kenya is creating a buzz on social media. We'll have these stories and more all ahead. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. With Nigeria's presidential election looming Saturday, some of the bitterness from the long election campaign is breaking into the open. The main opposition party has been unable to get the venues it wanted for its final rallies, and security guards had to protect the incumbent president when a member of his party was pelted with stones. VOA reporter Peter Cloti is in Nigeria and talked with our colleague Paul Alexander about the final developments in the lead-up to the voting.
Well, all the political parties are really stepping up their campaign efforts before the Saturday elections. However, this early morning, every Nigerian received a text message here in Lagos by the Independent National Electoral Commission, encouraging prospective voters to go to the polls on Saturday.
Do you think that this is political in some way, that one particular party or candidate would benefit from a higher turnout?
It's difficult to really say, because different states have different political parties being very popular there. For example, here in Lagos, the ruling party, the All Progressive Congress, is very prominent here. Although a large, they have a section that supports former Vice President Atiku Abubakar. But if you have the King of Lagos publicly declaring support for the incumbent president, then you know where the power lies or where the political wind is blowing. Both parties held campaign rallies in Lagos in the past few days. The incumbent president paid a courtesy call to the Oba of Lagos or the King of Lagos. However, the opposition leader did not come. And I asked the Oba, the king, why this was so. And he said perhaps the former vice president didn't want to be exposed. What he described as exposed, he wouldn't say. And that is why the former vice president didn't come. But it also questioned why the opposition party was prevented from using the national stadium, one of the biggest stadiums in the whole country. They were prevented from using it. The excuse of the reason why they were prevented from using it was because the government said the stadium was being renovated because of neglect over years. However, the latest development this morning is that their campaign in Abuja, the Nigerian capital, has been cancelled because they were also prevented from using the originally scheduled event place.
So can you tell me about this incident in which stones and water were thrown at this high-level leader?
All right, so the ruling party, the All Progressive Congress, has, you know, condemned the attack on officials of the ruling party at the campaign. An official of the party, Adams Oshomole, was pelted with stones, forcing the Secret Service to shield the president from the stones. A spokesman for the National Party chairman, who is Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu, said the incident is a disgrace, but added that the main opposition, PDP, was not behind the attack. They have sworn to investigate and punish the perpetrators of this crime. But local media reports say that a member of the party, the governor of the party, might have organized these people who threw stones and hooted, shouted at national officials of the party because they felt that the gubernatorial candidate was not their preferred choice.
That was VOA's Peter Clote in Lagos speaking with Paul Alexander. Cameroon's main opposition leader, Maurice Kamto, has been charged with rebellion and other offenses in a military court. His lawyer said the charges could result in the death penalty. Kamto lost the election last October, but he has argued there was widespread fraud in the voting. The former government minister was arrested in Douala last month for organizing a small demonstration against President Paul Biya. Security services broke up the protest with gunfire. Six people were injured. Agence France-Presse reports that about 100 others are to appear before the military court. Kamto's lawyer is also the vice president of the opposition leader's party, the Movement for the Rebirth of Cameroon. He said 28 of Kamto's supporters also have been charged. Zimbabwe's government says cabinet ministers approved the repeal of draconian legislation that has been used by the government to crack down on free speech and arrest members of the media. Reporter Kutsayi Zvinavashi has details.
Monica Mutswangwa is the Minister of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting. She read the resolutions from the cabinet meeting.
Cabinet also received a report which was presented by the Minister of Information on the principles of amendment of the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, IAPA, and the introduction of the Zimbabwe Media Commission Bill. The principle gives rise to the introduction of three separate bills, namely the Access to Information Bill, the Zimbabwe Media Commission Bill, and the Protection of Personal Information Data Protection Bill.
Nejo Nyamutumbu, Program Manager of the Media Alliance of Zimbabwe, a media organization that has long called for scrapping of oppressive legislation. He welcomes government's move.
Very long overdue that government only now comes to its senses to repeal draconian law whose intention was never to advance the right to free flow of information, but rather to muzzle the rights of citizens, in particular the rights of journalists to operate.
Nyamutumbu, however, has concerns about what comes next.
We certainly welcome the development, albeit cautiously. And cautiously, we need to agree in principle as Zimbabweans. Zimbabweans need to own the new right to information law that is going to be tabled. With the reports that the government is going to fast track this new access to information law, in a way, concern us, worry us, and we hope that such reports are not true.
Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament and political developments in the country. He says Zimbabweans should not prematurely celebrate the repeal of the draconian law.
I think we should look at it in the context of all the other laws, the Public Order and Security Act, the cyber laws that are impending. In as much as it's a welcome move by government to repeal IPA, I think let's look at what the minister is going to present, because they might repeal what's there now and replace it with more draconian laws.
The next few weeks and the introduction of new laws will be telling if government's attitude towards censoring free speech has changed. These developments are happening against a background where government is accused of gross human rights violations from violent January protests. For VOA, this is Kutsa Zvinavashi from Harare.
You U.S. Africa Command says it carried out airstrikes in Somalia, killing a total of 12 militants. The two attacks targeted al-Shabaab militants in the Lower Shabelle area of southern Somalia on Monday. The military action supported Somali forces that are leading an operation in the area. The Director of Operations for U.S. Africa Command, Major General Greg Olson, said Somali security forces are effectively targeting al-Shabaab forces in support of the government. Al-Shabaab carries out terror activities, including collecting illegal taxes from local residents. No civilians were reported injured in the operation. As the world celebrates International Radio Day, Rwandans remember the role that radio played in the genocide perpetrated against the Tutsi. They say that without radio, the mass killings would not have taken place as quickly. Media experts say the government has founded a number of agencies that monitor and prevent such messages of hate from being aired. Eugene Uimana has more from Kigali.
Rwanda is using International Radio Day to remind people about the impact of commentaries and discriminatory messages. That is from the announcement of the death of former President Juvenal Habyarimana in 1994. It was aired on Airy Telem, a Radio Télévision de Mille-Collines, the private hate media, encouraging Hutus to kill Tutsis following the plane crash that killed the president. Valérie Bimeriki was the Airy Telem presenter, who was jailed in 1989. In her testimony, she explained the role of some journalists in the genocide. At Airy Telem, journalists had to work just like the military or militia, so we couldn't let the enemy escape. We had to announce the places where enemies were hiding, even the buildings that served as shelters for Tutsis. The effectiveness of the radio's role is confirmed by Isaac Nkubito, a genocide perpetrator who was the district chief during the genocide. He was imprisoned in 1997. It was really horrible. You were afraid even to listen. It was like listening to the voice of death. We all said the time has come for the Tutsi to be eliminated. 25 years later, Rwanda now counts around 30 radio stations, and residents say they have learned from the bad history. They say they are educated about development projects and other unity activities from those stations. Victoire Kailanga lives in Kigali. Now we get important information from radios. From radio, we get to know how others work in agriculture, education, and technology to be more developed. Now I think there is no radio that air shows that intend to divide Rwandans. Media and the political analyst Oswadi Mutuyezu says the lessons that journalists learned from their colleagues' failure and the media laws mean Rwandans can listen comfortably because no station can repeat the same mistake.
It can't happen again. I think Rwandans must, trust the radio stations we have here in Rwanda. So, because the policy here in Rwanda, the government, the Commission for Unity and Reconciliation, the education Rwandans are receiving, I think nobody can use a radio station to divide Rwandans or to disseminate hatred messages. So I think they need to sit back and relax and listen to the station. But of course, they need to, to listen to them with a critical ear.
Though social media and internet make traditional media outdated, in Rwanda, radio still has power. The 2016 report by the National Institution of Research shows that more than 95% Rwandans are informed through radio. Eugene Uimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top story. Nigeria's main opposition party has been unable to get the venues it wanted for its final rallies, and security guards had to protect the incumbent president when a member of his party was pelted with stones. For more information and news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Egypt's parliament has begun deliberations on constitutional amendments that could allow President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to stay in office till 2034, 12 years after his second term expires in 2022. Other amendments include considering the military the guardian of a civic state and guaranteeing a 25% representation of women in legislative councils. The Al-Noor Party, with an Islamist orientation, rejected both, demanding a stipulation that Egypt is a modern democratic state with Islamic law as the main source for legislation. Experts believe the amendments are near certain to be approved by the parliament, but also need to be put to a national referendum to become a law. Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat, former chairman of the Human Rights Committee in the Egyptian parliament, told VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi the amendments were dictated and pose a threat to peaceful transfer of power in Egypt.
I think the Egyptian parliament was somehow told to do so. They are not the one who decide. They are known to be a rubber stamp. This is what they get from, let's say, the security or from the presidency, and they will go through it and they will approve it. This is what we all expect, you know. But of course, no one is happy with this. We have been forming a kind of a union against constitutional amendments represented by different political parties and some public figures, intellectuals, just to say no for this amendments, because what is really proposed is killing the idea of peaceful transformation of power and rotation of power. This is the main issue. Among other things, of course, that it's again, we are back to one man who is controlling, running everything. It means there will be no institutions, judiciary or any other institution. And also what was new is that in this amendments, the army role have been extended, that he is the guardian of democracy and freedom and politics, which is a bit strange. You know, we all know that the army take care of the national security, our borders, but now it will be constitutionally stipulated that he will always have the right to step in whenever you do have an elected president, a civil one. They could tell him yes and no, do this and don't do this, which is a bit strange.
The amendments are near certain to be overwhelmingly approved by the legislature, backed by Sisi's supporters, but will also need to be put to a national referendum to become a law. Would the Egyptian people support such amendments in a referendum?
Well, part of the Egyptians, honestly, they believe that they need the peace and stability, and Sisi will do this for them. So, yes, there will be people who will vote for this. But I believe that, you know, there is a big number of Egyptians who are not happy with this. So it's still not clear if people will call for boycotting the referendum or to participate and being positive and to say no. Still not clear, but I think they will manage. They will manage to make it through. You know, they have all the means and tools.
So how would these amendments impact any future of democratic transition in Egypt?
It kills all hope for any future politics in Egypt. I always have hope, and we will keep trying. We will keep speaking what we really feel is right for Egypt. But I know that we are working in a very difficult atmosphere, very difficult environment politically, and also especially that you don't have any kind of access to any media or any of all those, you know, even website nowadays, it's becoming very difficult, you know. And we have seen a lot of threats, actions taken against some of those who are saying no to the constitution. So it's life became difficult. But as we always say, Egypt is wonderland. There is always surprises. So we have to keep trying and wait and see.
But do you expect any international response to these amendments?
I don't think so. I think Europe is quite busy. They have their internal problems. And the Americans, as you know, they are keeping a distance. And maybe even they are giving a blessing, you know. So I don't think. And there might be some statements from here or there, but there will not be a real pressure or a real position, simply because they need Egypt and they believe that there is no other option. And the president is strong and he is, you know, controlling the whole scene. So I don't think, or I don't expect, that there will be real pressure, you know.
That was Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat, former chairman of Human Rights Committee in the Egyptian parliament. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy. Thousands of people are sharing pictures of a rare black panther from Kenya on social media and the internet. Nicholas Pilfold, the lead researcher for a leopard conservation program, heard reports of the secretive animal at the Lakapia Wilderness Camp in central Kenya. A black panther is actually a leopard that is black. Pilfold notes that black leopards in Africa are extremely rare. Some suggest it may have been more than 100 years since one has been photographed in East Africa. The term black panther describes either a leopard or jaguar with gene mutation, making it look jet black, although the big cat's spots remain just visible to a sharp eye. The EU has added Saudi Arabia and Nigeria to its list of countries suspected of illegal financial activity. The blacklist targets countries and territories where money laundering and terror financing are a concern because of weak controls. The move today does not immediately place sanctions on listed countries, but EU banks must carry out additional checks on payments involving the countries. The effort is part of a campaign against illegal financial activity linked to EU banks. 23 countries and territories are on the EU list, with Libya, Botswana, Ethiopia, Tunisia, and Yemen among the African nations. Uganda was among 5 nations removed. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily report when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, an international edition for the latest from Lagos.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigeria's presidential election is set for February 16th. President Muhammadu Buhari of the APC and top challenger Atiku Abubakar of the PDPs are both Fulani Muslims. A discussion on what's at stake on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Tante AU, African Youth, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.